Chapter 34. The Recital. In the weeks leading up to the recital, our sister trio rehearsed The Preacher and the Bear every chance we got, hoping that a dazzling performance would distract the audience from the silliness of our costumes. In private conversations, we began to wonder if Miss Young was intentionally trying to embarrass us to get back at our father, who was showing no interest in her. Now that the entire elementary and junior high school would be participating in the program, the stakes were even higher. Everyone would see us. And much to Irma's dismay, everyone included Chester Carroll. Sarah's growth was no longer spurting. It had turned into an all-out gusher, making her a quarter inch taller than me, and making her white dress all the tighter. I watched my younger sister, I couldn't call her my little sister anymore, try on that dress every day and fret about the possibility of splitting it wide open during our ball kick twirl maneuver. We even tried to switch dresses, but that didn't help much either. Between Sarah's fears of busting out of her costume and Irma's fears of being seen in her costume, I had spent the last few weeks reading and rereading Miss Bennett's letter. A lady, the letter said, concerned herself with the needs of others. By the time the recital arrived, I had hatched another plan. Standing between Irma and Sarah in the school's small auditorium, I watched the school's special dancing exhibition unfold. From the smallest first graders to the oldest in the ranks of junior high school, every child had at least a few steps memorized. Buddy and some of the other kids in my grade took the stage and square danced. Chester sat in the audience on the second row with his parents. He was participating only as a spectator since he hadn't returned to school all semester, but his folks were insisting he return to school the following year, wherever it might be that Mr. Carroll found a job. Mr. Carroll had recently returned from points unknown and claimed he had some good job leads out west. He and Mrs. Carroll smiled and applauded with pride at Buddy's performance, and I laughed at the exaggerated bow that Buddy took on stage. It seemed they were finding a way through their grief of losing baby Vera. Most of the school kids wore regular school clothes to dance in. Some wore shoes, some didn't. Nobody seemed too concerned about footwear or the lack thereof. Lucky dogs, Irma murmured as each uncostumed child took their turn on the stage. I nodded in agreement, staring down at the 10 yards of ruffles wrapped around her cotton church dress. Even Betsy Pendleton, who had initially said she was envious of my dance lessons, seemed relieved that she got to dance with the plain-clothed kids rather than to be forced to look like I did. Gwendolyn Sidwell tried to console me about the dreadful costumes, assuring me that they couldn't be as bad as I swore they were. But when she saw us girls bound up in them as we arrived at the school that afternoon, pity washed across Gwendolyn's face. Mrs. Sidwell had altered an old dress and added a petticoat to make a costume for Gwendolyn's Irish jig. And while it may not have been as fancy as Maxine's beautiful outfit, Gwendolyn looked like a princess in it compared to me. Miss Young had scheduled us to perform just before the final act, which was a beautifully choreographed ballet featuring Maxine Mathis, who deserved to be the closing act because she danced as gracefully as a snowflake twirling on a gentle breeze. The act before us was a patriotic tap dance, performed by the Dalton twins, who were good enough to do a shuffle-toe-toe, step-heel-stomp in rapid repetition, and whose parents could afford to buy them actual tap shoes. Maxine's placement was not a mystery, since she deserved to be the closing act. But I wondered why Miss Young would make us follow those stomping Dalton sensations with a song and dance as silly as The Preacher and the Bear. But regardless of Miss Young's intentions, we were up next. Shoulder-length curls playfully slapped at my cheeks as I took a deep breath and shook my body from head to toe like a dog shaking off water. Following Irma to the stage, I had to remind myself that I begged Daddy for this opportunity just a few fleeting months ago. Instead of the excitement and joy I expected to feel, I felt a sense of sorrow for talking my sisters into this mess. Climbing the 3 steps to the stage, I turned and glanced behind the podium to ensure my plan remained in place. I had found no time to fill in my sisters on the details as we left the house that morning, but I did find time before the program to give them brief instructions, to stash my secret, and to chat with Mrs. Ulaberry, the plump piano player, who was now offering me an assuring wink as we took our places on the stage. I met eyes with Buddy and Chester, who were seated with their parents and sisters. Buddy was pointing and laughing at the spectacle on stage, but Chester, as Daddy had predicted, stared straight-faced at us while elbowing Buddy hard enough to make Buddy cough, more than usual. And instead of being irked by Buddy's behavior, I felt relieved he was becoming his old self again. Turning toward the audience, I scanned everyone's faces. The women offered encouraging grins. Some of the men appeared to wish they were anywhere but there. And the children shook their heads, pointed at us, and leaned into one another, their whispers and giggles barely stifled enough to keep their parents from scolding them. I broke out in a sweat when Mrs. Ulaberry began to play the first few notes of The Preacher and the Bear. How could I possibly stop my plan from unfolding? What had I been thinking? I couldn't go through with this. But before I could signal my sisters to abandon my earlier instructions, Sarah marched off the stage with a defiant stomp right on cue as I had directed earlier. "Wait," I wanted to yell, but couldn't. And then off went Irma, following Sarah's lead right down the aisle with no hesitation. A concerned murmur rose from the audience, and I froze, eyes wide as light bulbs. What had I done? I couldn't perform alone, and I knew it. It was the spring play all over again, only this time my sisters were at risk of embarrassment, too. I scanned the confused spectators, and my gaze stopped when it met my father's, and I saw standing there beside him, by the doors, in the back of the room, was Miss Bennett. She made it! I remembered again how badly Miss Bennett wanted me to perform in the spring play 2 years earlier. I wanted to show my favorite teacher I could perform with the best of them, but I couldn't then, and this certainly was not the Shirley Temple moment I had envisioned either. This was a nightmare. I watched as Miss Bennett raised her fingers to her cheeks, pointed at her mouth, and displayed a toothy smile. Miss Bennett's words again returned to me. "Ladies have to be brave sometimes." I looked over at Mrs. Ulaberry, whose piano playing had slowed to a rest. The rounded woman searched my face for direction, but a look of terror was all I could give our musician. I wondered whether Shirley Temple ever got nervous. I pictured Shirley's dimpled smile. Shirley never seemed nervous. But maybe, just maybe, could it have been her smile that kept her from getting nervous? Looking back toward Miss Bennett, I saw that my beloved teacher continued to grin brightly at me. I could hear murmurs rising from the audience, and I feared booing would begin at any moment. "Ladies have to be brave sometimes. Hurry, Angel, hurry." Locking eyes with Miss Bennett, a smile slowly widened my face. I took a deep breath through my nostrils, and then I pointed with both hands to Mrs. Ulaberry. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. The piano shimmied as Mrs. Ulaberry started pounding out the tune to Happy Days Are Here Again. With visions of Shirley Temple in my head and a massive smile stretched across my face, I broke into the performance of my life as I began to sway and sing in the most animated way. "Say, can you see how we're dressed? Decked out in bows, we're such a mess. You can plainly understand, I bet, why these costumes we protest." The audience responded with instant laughter as I pointed to our silly-looking ruffles, and when I untied one wrist bow and chunked it to the floor in demonstration of our protest, the audience cheered. I ran to the other side of the stage and stopped next to the podium. I began the next verse as I reached behind the podium to retrieve my hidden loot. "So if you'll excuse us now, we will put on clothes that we use to plow, and we'll be right back to show you how overalls bring out our best." By this time, a few of the parents started to clap and others were slowly joining in. Seeing the crowd's response gave me more confidence than ever. I yelled in a singing voice, "Irma, Sarah, come on back!" Mrs. Ulibarri played on, and I motioned for my sisters. They bounded up to the stage, grabbed their overalls, and all three of us disappeared behind the curtain while we wiggled into our familiar farm clothes. Before ducking off stage, I glanced back out into the audience and spotted Miss Young, whose facial expressions were a mixture of horror, confusion, and glee. At this point, I didn't care if Miss Young never taught me another dance move, nor did I care if I had to spend the entire summer grounded. I had the spotlight, and it felt more wonderful than I ever dreamed it could. After a quick change with our dresses haphazardly tucked into our overalls, I told my sisters to wait on hooking our straps, and we emerged onto the stage again. We clapped along with the audience while pulling yard after gaudy yard of yellow ruffles off one another, twirling as our ruffles were unwound. The audience loved it. Mrs. Ulibarri continued to play Happy Days until we hooked our straps, took our places again, and I gave her a nod. Mrs. Ulibarri then cleared her throat and shouted, "Ready, girls?" We struck our opening poses, and she began to play the most romping version of The Preacher and the Bear that anyone had ever heard. We Weber sisters did not miss a beat that day. Our harmonizing blended together as delectably as any recipe, and our soft shoe steps kept in perfect sync. By the end of our performance, the audience was on its feet, vibrating the windows with their raucous cheering. We locked hands and took three bows, and on the third bow, I noticed the parents patting Miss Young on the back, congratulating her for inventing such an imaginative routine. Miss Young was not correcting the misunderstanding, choosing instead to accept the misplaced praise and all the attention that came with it. Sarah tapped me on the arm.
"Do you see what I see?" she asked.
"Yeah," I said, annoyed. "Miss Young getting all the credit for our number."
"No, further back," Sarah pointed.
I looked beyond Miss Young, patting her chest in deceitful gratitude. Beyond goofy acting Buddy Carroll whistling a cheer and pointing wildly at his eyeball. Beyond his brother Chester clapping heartily. Beyond a dozen rows of parents and children applauding with excitement. And then I saw it. At the back of the room, unnoticed by the audience, a happy couple was leaning against each other and holding hands. Mouth gaping, I whispered,
"Daddy and Miss Bennett?"
Sarah darted off the stage, and I lunged forward in an effort to join her, but Irma caught hold of my shoulder and held on to me. I turned back.
"Come on! Daddy and Miss Bennett, do you see?"
I jumped around and pointed.
"Wait," said Irma.
"Why?"
I asked, frantic. This was no time to wait.
"I had forgotten."
Irma's voice cracked and became squeaky. I quieted.
"Forgotten what?" I asked.
"I had forgotten what Mama's smile looked like."
I stood in silence, having no idea how to respond. I shook my head, wondering what she meant.
"Your smile, little bit. Everyone says you have Mama's smile. But it's not just the way you look. Mama's smile was more than a smile. It was an attitude."
A tear rolled down Irma's cheek, and she wiped it away as her cheeks puffed out, revealing a grin of her own.
"Mama was a dreamer. Mama never took no for an answer. When you called me back on stage today, I saw Mama's smile.
I bit my lip and sniffed back tears. Irma reached for my hand and led me to the back of the room where Sarah was locked in a three-way hug with Daddy and Miss Bennett. The cheering died down. Maxine Mathis took the stage, and I stood with my family of five as we watched Maxine's dance in polite silence. When Maxine performed the final pirouette and applause filled the room, I clapped along with them. But I wasn't wishing to be Maxine. I wasn't wishing for Maxine's ballet slippers or the splendor of her nice home. I wasn't wishing for the silver screen or Shirley Temple's bouncy curls or Ginger Rogers' loveliness. I wished in that moment for nothing more than what I already had. I had finally accepted that I wanted a mother, and even though my mother could never be replaced, I had my sisters and my daddy, and a hole in our lives was about to be filled.
Memory joggers. What is the bravest thing you ever did as a child? What is the bravest thing you remember someone else doing when you were young?